I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip, hip hop, you don't stop. Rap, 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 rap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. This is the time of the week when we hang out with a couple of friends here in studio and talk about the events of the week and just kind of, you know, have beer or coffee. I have coffee. You guys got beer? Anybody got beer? What's in that flask there?
Water. You know. I'm a big, right, I'm a water boy.
You didn't bring your wife's Stanley Cup?
No, not one of her three, unfortunately.
Are you going to get her the Mother's Day one?
Is there a Mother's Day? No, don't tell me this, because if you tell me this, then I'm responsible to actually get it. Now I can
now
plead ignorance.
It's all, it's all over. I just saw the story yesterday. They're coming up with it. Anyway, sorry, folks. Josh Newby, who is a dear friend, he's the executive director of the Council on Aging of West Florida. We were in LEAP together, and his wife likes Stanley Cups.
Yep.
Mother's Day is coming. Kim Klein is a new friend. I met her when we were at the Gulf Breeze Arts Festival a couple of weeks ago. She is the former government teacher and debate coach for the Gulf Breeze High School. She is the owner of Tranquil Villas on the west side, a retirement living community.
Yes, a retirement community.
And also a candidate for State Representative District 2 as a no-party affiliate candidate, which is kind of an unusual thing. Kim, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Good to have you. I'm excited about this. I don't know. What do you want to start with? I think... Josh, I'm going to start with your favorite story of the week.
Yeah, it really was my favorite story of the week. I want to say, well, go ahead and introduce it. Sorry. I'm jumping the gun here.
I love it. No, longtime staffer at NPR. It was in the Transgressors. Longtime staffer at NPR comes out and says, NPR isn't just liberal leaning. It's exclusively liberal these days. It's progressive. It is progressive to the exclusion of other voices. It's causing us to lose audience. All the indicators are there. I think the most poignant fact was he said that out of 87 registered voting party affiliates in the newsroom, in the editorial division at NPR in Washington, D.C., 87 of them are registered Democrats. Zero are registered Republicans. It's everything from anti-Trumpism to various woke elements that, you know, have completely infected NPR to the point where even ordinary liberal Democrats don't feel like it's their station exactly, that it's, you know, or their news source. It's something even they feel a bit too conservative for a lot of times. But you are, I mean, I listen to NPR sometimes. Yeah. I always like to listen to the other side, always like to listen to the other side, because I think that's how you learn what's going on in the world. But you're a fan or have been a fan in the past.
Yeah, I've been a longtime NPR acolyte, a very liberal Democrat. And even I, like you said, I noticed a shift starting in 2016 with Trump, obviously. It sort of started reaching this panicked level of, do we present the facts of the case, or do we sort of bias
advocate
it in a way against Trump? And of course, NPR, let's be honest, has always had a progressive bent.
Of course.
But that's been okay with me, because they've been mindful of that.
They've been good journalists.
Correct.
Within that, or even before that. Yeah.
And then
I agree.
I think it reached a fever pitch in 2020 with George Floyd and all of the racial tensions. And the article came out at a time when I'm also reading this book called Where Have All the Democrats Gone, that talks about this shadow party that is overly focused on four things: trans rights, climate change, racial tension, and immigration.
Okay.
To the harm of the vast electorate. So the Democratic Party and also NPR has this classist bias that only really pertains to highly educated white liberals and no longer is relevant to what has typically made up the Democratic Party, which is minorities,
right,
you know, the working poor,
right,
those
right.
folks. They've
union
they've
members,
lost their
you know, economic
right.
yes. liberals, so to speak,
yes.
Minority
it's not
members.
It's the big tent that it used to be
correct.
Seen at, for sure.
Correct. Right.
And, you know, you kind of see this with both parties sort of, you know, heading out to the fringes of each side. And so I think that has a lot to do with, you know, the frustration of voters with not feeling like there's a voice in the middle.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
And I, you know, again, you know, NPR never represented a viewpoint that was aligned with mine. But like with Diane Rehm, it's a fabulous show.
Right.
Like I would kill to have their guest booker.
Right.
I mean, just, you know, for a national show. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
They did a fantastic job. And then when I think it was Josh Johnson. Is that the guy's name that came on?
Yeah. For 1A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He started 1A and he was a gay black guy, which is fine. I'll listen to you. And it started to change. And then I saw some of their editorial decisions. I thought, man, y'all have just like gone down the spiral here. And again, it's not that that's not a valid viewpoint, but if that's your only viewpoint and everything else is not presented, they were, or occasionally presented.
I'll tell you what changed it in my mind is I remember years ago they were talking about corn subsidies.
Okay.
And the economic impact on the Midwest. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't know a lot about corn subsidies. This is, you know, an opportunity.
But I'm going to learn something.
Exactly. I'm going to learn something.
Right.
And they said, and let's talk about how this is affecting Black and brown communities. And fine if you want to view it through that lens. But for me, it was so emblematic of ignoring this educational opportunity to focus on an identitarian lens.
Yeah. Do you think they can course correct? I mean, this has been like all the news in that sphere this week.
I think that they're struggling right now because they're losing a lot of their listeners to podcasts. You know,
yeah.
A lot of the stuff that they do, a lot of those like concentrated stories that a lot of us listen to NPR on satellite on long trips, and you know, you learn all kinds of new stuff. But I think that they're suffering from that anyway. I do think that. Because from the article, I think that the one that you're referencing, there were several people that also worked for NPR that came out and said that they agreed with the essay. And
yeah.
So I do think that there's, once that attention has been called, and especially since NPR does get a lot of federal funding, you know, I think that they're going to be under the microscope to say, hey, this has to be less biased, this has to be more centralized, and you have to make sure that whatever you're covering is in a more balanced, nuanced way.
I'll give you I think this will help kind of understand a little bit. I have a dear friend from a long time ago when we were in Phoenix, and he was a social work professor, a white Christian conservative social work professor.
A unicorn.
He's a yeah. A unicorn, absolutely. And he, you know, there's this very, very famous essay from decades ago called Unpacking the Backpack of White Privilege, I think it's called, or something in that. It basically, that was the seminal article that got people to talk about things like white privilege and recognizing that what you carry around with you all the time, these advantages and tools as a white male conservative or Christian anyway in this culture. And, you know, you take it for granted. You never think about it. It's you're blind to it, but everybody who doesn't have those privileges sees very clearly that you have them, okay?
Okay.
Which, you know, we can have a good conversation about to what degree that's still relevant. But I, for one, think, if you think that's not true, you're not paying attention. You know,
right.
A lot of people in my camp would tend to try to deny that's true, and I think, no, that is true largely. But anyway, he had written, and it went through like, there's like 90 things in there. You know, what happens when you show up at a party, and what happens with your name tag, and what happens on your resume, and it's all of this whole list of things, particular examples. Well, he wrote a version of that, which is Unpacking the Knapsack of Liberal Privilege.
Okay.
And it was meant to be a, hey, you know, in my field in social work, people are really into criticizing this privilege set that people have. You do realize, though, that in academia and in media and in entertainment that you have the knapsack today.
Right.
Sure.
And, oh, nobody wants to admit that. Nobody wants. And I think what's going on at NPR is they're all knapsack and don't realize the liberal privilege that they're sort of self-focused on.
Yeah.
And they just think it's right, and they don't think about that's not a good place to be for all the criticism they have of the privilege concept.
Yeah, they want to you know, boost Black voices. They want to improve Black communities. But poor Black, and I say this as a white man, but lot of our clientele is Black and in impoverished communities.
Here in Escambia County.
Yes. Black people don't want to abolish the police. Black people don't care about trans rights. I'm sorry. Black people are still recovering from redlining.
Right.
You know, let's
right.
talk about that.
And they're very and often very deeply religious, very heavily Christian. You know, and so that comes into play when it comes to sexual morality. That comes into play when you're talking about abortion rights and all kinds of other stuff that, you know, it's always been a bit of an uncomfortable relationship within the Democratic Party because they're taken for granted, and yet big sections of the Black electorate don't align with the National Democratic platform.
Right.
Well, they operate in a bubble. You've talked about this a lot of times about getting inside your bubble. Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea with some, as you say, more elite folks is this idea that we know best, mm-hmm. you know, so you have this theoretical idea of what poverty is, you have this, but you've never actually experienced it. So I think that the much stronger voice are the folks, it's like you said, that said, let's talk about the stuff that actually matters to us being able to keep our heads above water.
Right.
And a lot of these other issues are, they're theoretical conversations, but they're not right. practical,
yeah.
right? And what they're looking for is practical solutions. And I do agree that that's something that's been lacking.
Yeah.
For sure. From the left.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just NPR, okay? We're right. This is about
sure.
NPR, but, you
sure.
know, you've seen, I think you can make similar observations about the newsrooms of NBC, ABC, CBS, the New York Times. You know, you look across the board at a lot of the cultural purveyors of so-called truth. And what conservatives have been saying for years and years is, oh my God, don't you see?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
Just real quickly, let's not let the right off.
No. I'm not saying that, you know, Fox is always right
too.
And that Newsmax is right, and certainly Donald Trump has done. Anyway, so no, I agreed. It's not an exclusive thing. It's just, it's not just NPR either.
Sure,
I don't know how much I'd bring it up if it were just NPR. 847 News Radio 92.3. Jimmy's got traffic for us. Jimmy?
If you are on Kingsfield Road and Felden Lane in Cantonment, there is a roadway blocked due to a vehicle crash. If you are on North W Street and Truman Avenue, there is also a vehicle crash with a roadblock. And Blue Angel Parkway and Lillian Highway has been cleared. If you do see anything else, please call or text our traffic tip line at 437-1620. I'm Jimmy with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. Back to the wrap with Kim Klein and Josh Newby. Kim, who is a former government teacher at Gulf Breeze High School and debate coach. My favorite things in the whole wide world, you know. So I,
awesome
you know, I'm a huge believer in debate. And you and I actually talked about this at Gulf Breeze Arts Fest that to me, what debate does, in addition to teaching you to marshal evidence, organize your thinking, communicate it, stand in front of people, public speaking, all that, the big thing debate does is it forces you to practice arguing for a side you disagree with.
That's exactly
as if you agreed with it.
That's exactly right. And it really, from a teaching perspective, what it shows students is that there are smart people on both sides of just about mm-hmm. every controversial issue. So when they're put in the position where they can look at all the evidence and they're not in this silo of information like so many of us are, you know, so many
yep.
adults are, you create this wonderful thing. That, in addition to being able to get kids over the fear of speaking so that they can advocate for themselves and share their ideas, which is a huge hurdle to overcome in high school. I can't say enough about that. There should be a debate program in every single school.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. Somebody had made a comment to me recently. I'm trying to remember who it was, and I can't. But the comment about social media, which was that social media, what we call the algorithm, you know, mm-hmm. for these social media mm-hmm. companies, is they want to give you more of what they
right.
think you want.
Right.
Which
right.
typically is going to be they want to give you things that you agree with, that
right.
you want to see more of. And so social media reinforces your bubble, reinforces your biases.
Creates
because
more division.
Yep. Yeah. And so it makes it, it's literally feeding you sort of the, or it's metaphorically, it's feeding you like the Turkish delight in Narnia.
Right.
You know, it's just, you're eating yourself to death with no really good information. Because what we all need in our lives is, you know, whether it's a Bible or a pastor or a friend or an alternate news source, is things that are going to check us and correct us and mm-hmm. point out where
right.
we're going astray.
Right.
You know, we don't need somebody to tell us we're right. We're pretty good at that ourselves.
Right, right.
right,
yeah.
right. So. And being able to work with people who you don't necessarily agree with on everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we all have to do that in the workplace. We certainly would like our elected officials to be able to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know?
I did want to ask you your view. I was talking about this earlier today. The governor of Louisiana was upset that LSU's girls team was not in the basketball arena for the national anthem. And he thought that was a slight or an insult. And, you know, there's a lot of sort of fact issues here about maybe that's just what teams do. Sometimes they miss the anthems because they're preparing or they're training or they're going over last minute, you know, rousal speeches or whatever. But let's take it as if it were a protest. You know, let's imagine that's what it was. And I said, students in school mm-hmm. have the right to not say the anthem. They have the right to not stand there in front of the flag. Now, maybe we give them the option to sit, whatever, but it's basically a school
right.
event,
right.
and students don't lose their rights when they go in the schoolroom door. NFL, major leagues, military, maybe some jobs you might compel, you know, because that's transactional. But the First Amendment protects the right to dissent, right?
Right, right, exactly. And schools are part of a level of government. I mean, the Supreme Court's been very clear on on how much control government can have over that. So certainly, like in a K through 12 setting, you know, there are some limits that students check at the door. They can't say everything they want. They can't curse in school. They can't do things like that. But when it comes to the issue of being able to stand for the pledge, I think, you know, you can't force someone to do that. I think as a good educator, you compel kids to want to do that. You know, you show them that this is a great, this is such a great country. You should want to stand up and do this.
Right.
But you cannot compel that. That's the opposite of freedom,
right.
You know, and that's what we're, that's what it's all about. You know, I mean, we
with
live in
liberty
this
and
freedom.
Justice for all,
right.
Just not people who are at school events.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I mean, and again, if that's what the First Amendment protects explicitly, speech,
right.
Association, and to compel performance of patriotic obeisance to some mm-hmm. symbol that they view as a problem. Oh my God, don't you get what the flag stands for?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the Pharisees and Sadducees, right? If you're not performing your patriotism for all to see, is it really patriotism?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And also that the worst speech, the speech we don't want to hear, the Supreme Court said that's the most protected. That's what should be the most protected.
And the most important.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Because.
And though I can't stand it when people won't honor the flag, I can't stand it when they burn a flag or when they, whatever, when they won't show honor to it, when they disrespect it, when they kneel at the anthem, all of those things I find infuriating. Okay, that's
right.
What the First Amendment protects.
Yeah. Infuriated.
Yeah. So yeah. Literally the tolerance of things that infuriate me is specifically what the First Amendment is supposed to codify, right?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
437-1620. If you hear something you want to react to and talk about with us, that is totally fine. I've been on this today particularly because Jared Moore last night did what I consider to be a fairly brave thing. He got up and, he was sitting there, but, you know, he spoke at the end of the city council meeting and said, you know, we're 11 weeks without a District 4 commissioner in Escambia County.
Mm-hmm.
That's 20% of the year for 20% of the commission. The people who live in the city, at least they have the city resources. They have access to their city council members and the mayor and so forth. But people who don't live in the city in District 4, there's Escambia unincorporated in District 4, including Pensacola Beach and some parts up to the north. They literally have no representative for the last 2.5, almost 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a problem.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
This is a real problem. The governor is dragging his feet. In the past, we know it's taken him a long time to appoint replacements. And for Jared Moore, who wants to be the appointee.
Right.
To
right.
get up and
to
say,
pump, right.
implied the governor's not doing his job, you know, that's probably not likely to facilitate him getting the position.
Right.
I would like to believe we lived in a world where it would help, where the
right.
governor would be, oh, that's the kind of person we want.
And it is the kind of person we want.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
The person who doesn't mind telling truth to power.
Right.
Because if he's willing to tell the truth to the governor, and the governor has a lot of weaknesses, this being one of them, then I think Jared would also be willing to tell truth to the institutional power of the community, the developers, the bears, you know,
right.
what have you. And I think that is the kind of person that you want in office. But so frequently it's not the person who gets in office.
And somebody who's listening to the people.
Sure.
I mean, that's really, you know, I attended that county commissioners meeting last week, and I saw, you know, person after person after person go up and say that they were being negatively affected by the subdivision that's being put in there, the JoJo subdivision that
yeah.
we talked
mm-hmm.
about. And so, and every time they got up, they thought, well, we're just really concerned that we don't have anybody representing our district. So we're appealing to the rest of you guys to listen. We live in a system of government where you have your representation.
Right.
And if you don't have representation in elected government, then you don't have a voice. And I think these folks are feeling like they're being ignored.
Go ahead, Josh.
Well, I was going to say, and for a Republican governor who is supposedly so prioritizes home rule, local governance,
mm-hmm.
right?
But
you would think this would be a priority.
That's not what's
happening. Oh, no, of course not.
That is not what's
but
happening.
But philosophically,
yes.
you would think
yes.
it would be consistent.
We'll come back to this in a second because I think this is a really important one. Jimmy's got traffic on the fives. Jimmy?
If you are on Kingsfield Road and Fendon Lane in Cantonment, that roadway is blocked due to a vehicle crash on Truman and North W Street. That roadway is now clear, and the accident that was on Blue Angel Parkway and Lillian has been clear as well. If you see anything else on the road, please give us a call or text at the traffic tip line, 437-1620. I'm Jimmy with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. So we're back to this. Oh, and by the way, Jimmy is our new producer, officially kind of Monday, really, will be his last training day. Today's his last training day. But Jimmy, welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me.
And Jake, who is going to stay on Pep Talk but had family issues with being here on the morning show, is leaving us. Jake, put your face in front of the mic for 2 seconds. I just want to say... I love you, and I'm so glad you've been here, and I'm going to miss you, but we're glad we're finding a solution that works better for you.
And I'm glad I still get to see you every day, though.
At Changer, that's exactly too, right. Bro. All right, so back to this conversation about the District 4 vacancy in Escambia County. Yeah, I was just doing a real quick look of a map, and JoJo subdivision, so you have this long-standing subdivision there with single-family residents in a fairly rural sort of setting. Not super rural, but fairly. And there's a massive apartment complex that wants to go in. I think that's the basic gist of it. Hundreds of people, and they're likely to use those roads as access. And it's a big mess, right? It's the kind of thing that active, engaged people go to try to protest and to stop from happening. Mm-hmm. And right now, those people have no representative.
Right.
They got to, you know, hope for the kindness of strangers, basically, that, you know, Stephen Barry and Jeff Bergosh and Lumen May and Mike Kohler, who are not their representatives, are going to care to stop. I've been told, they're texting me this morning, these JoJo residents, where they're saying, we don't have anybody to appeal to, and we think the builder is maybe trying to take advantage of this gap in order to get something through that he couldn't get through if there was a D4 representative. That's bad. Right. Really, really bad.
It is bad in terms of not having a direct line for redress of grievances. But I'm curious, just from a political perspective.
Yeah.
Do you think, because majority is still three, so would having that District 4 seat filled change the calculus of the actual voting?
The three vote is a block almost always.
Right.
Jeff Bergosh, Lumen May, and Stephen Barry, block with which I disagree pretty vehemently, pretty frequently. That said, there is such a strong, long-standing principle of district deference in Escambia County, where we have single district representatives. They will do something against the will of the district representative, as Lumen May will be very quick to remind you happened with Rawson Lane being vacated for the benefit of PCC. But still, almost always will they defer, and this would be a case where the D4 representative, if he were there, could say, this is my district, I think you can defer to me a little bit.
Gotcha.
Right, and with so much new development that's going in, I mean, there are billions of dollars being allocated now for different developments across the county that not having that fifth person there is definitely going to be not good.
Well, even if the votes didn't change, the conversation changes because you got a different voice.
Sure.
Who is accountable to different people. And that is the point of the representative democracy that we have. All right, we have less than a minute to go. Teachers are now using AI to grade papers submitted by kids who probably used AI to write the paper, and they're actually recommending AI to help the kids write better.
Oh, I have a very strong opinion on this.
My wife's a teacher. Let me just,
So I was a government teacher. I taught AP Gov. And one of the things that I did was I gave research paper assignments out. It's very difficult to do now because if you have, you know, if you have over 100 students and the years where we had a lot of people signing up for that class, some of the years I had, you know, 150 kids. And that's a lot of papers to grade. And we are not, at least in Santa Rosa County, we weren't allotted time during the day to grade. So I'm not saying that this is a good thing, but I'm saying
it's like a TA.
They need to write more.
Okay.
Streamline
it. Well, Kim Klein and Josh Newby, thank you for the time.
95.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.